applying the IT trip manual to all the properties on like the PSU campus is not as accurate as looking at it as a whole campus. And part of the reason is that you have, you know, a lot of students that are walking between buildings. You may have consolidated parking garages and other things like that. So they have basically some direction inside the IT manual that says there's ways that you can do that analysis that would actually give you better numbers. The other thing about the way that our proposal works, where as you generate more trips, everybody pays the same amount for the first 5,000 trips, for the next 10,000 trips. But as you work your way up, those categories start to have some discounts in the amount that you pay per trip. And so having this campus rule for some of the larger institutions, schools being the main one, there's other properties like the Port where they have a lot of properties that are inside that aren't separated by public right-of-way, those sort of things. It's basically a provision inside the IT that allows you to create a rate that seems to be more fair for those types of properties. One of the other things that I think is worth highlighting is there are things that we've really tried to incorporate in this proposal that we think are listening to a lot of what we're hearing from the public about how do we make sure that that the public can trust us, that what we're going to do with these revenues are going to add a lot of value to the city. And the first one is we've worked with our advisory committee to develop really strong project selection criteria within the different funding programmatic sort of allocations that I'll talk about in just a minute, that make sure that as we're allocating those resources, we're doing it in a way that's addressing the biggest needs and making sure that we can be as efficient as we can be with those allocations. Obviously, the charter amendment and making sure that the revenue doesn't in the future go to some non-transportation purpose is another really important component of building that trust. A strong oversight committee will hopefully help with that. And then in addition, we've gotten really good feedback from the business community and others about the need for an annual report. And one of the things this year that's been really nice that I hadn't heard in the past was, how do we do that in a way that includes both external auditing elements as well as the work of this group? So, you know, the city has a lot of external auditing that happens. To the degree that we can have a report that includes some external auditing elements as well as the work of this oversight committee, I think is a really nice additional way that we can build some trust around that reporting requirement. Almost to the end here, I just wanted to highlight, how the revenue is being allocated. The current proposal is that about 53% of the revenue would go for maintenance, 44% for safety, and 3% for some other priorities that I will talk about in just a second.
Mark?
Yes.
Just to clarify, this is not in the ordinance. The ordinance says at least 80% to maintenance and safety. This is just our projection of over the next several years how we think that the money would be spent.
That's right. And we've created some nice documents. One of them, the one-pager that's out there has mostly orange and black colors on it, that, again, would be a document that we could give to the Oversight Committee that would provide some of that direction and that additional criteria. So on the maintenance side, 80%, we proposed of that 53% going to maintenance, 80% of it would go for paving. The majority of that would be focused on our busiest streets, 15% for operations and 5% for bridges.
Mark, operations, that includes, for instance, the street signals, right, which also need maintenance?
Exactly. Street signals, street lights, signs, pavement markings. It's also, as Jamie is reminding me, very important for safety. I think sometimes when we've looked at this, there's sort of been this fight about, you know, more money for maybe we need more money for safety, which is, you know, great. I mean, it's really important. But when you look at things like maintaining a signal, maintaining pavement markings, maintaining signs, even though we call them maintenance, there's huge safety components of that as well. So this gives you a sense of what we would be able to do with that over a five-year period. We think we'd be able to do 150 to 250 miles of pavement maintenance. So that's, if you think about this year, where we increased 50 miles, went from just under 50 miles of pavement maintenance the year before to 100 miles. This would allow us to do basically 150 miles, an additional 50 miles if we can achieve that 250-mile target over the 5 years. It would allow us to improve 30 to 40 traffic signals, get those signals off the span wire that are blowing in the wind, that are hard to see when the sun's setting, and make it so they have modern pedestrian activation so that when, you know, the peds can be safe when they're pedestrians and people walking can be safe when they're crossing the street. It would allow us to continue to invest in the conversion of LED streetlights. It would allow us to do work on 1 to 3 bridges and just do a much better job of our crosswalk maintenance than we're doing today. On the safety side, and again, I think this is another really nice improvement over the proposal that we had in 2007, we're proposing to allocate 2/3 of the revenue to busy streets. There's been some awesome work done by Metro around where crashes are occurring in the region. And not a huge surprise, they're concentrated on our busiest streets. So our proposal is to allocate 2/3 of the revenue for safety improvements on our busiest streets. That includes high crash corridors like Barber, 82nd, 122nd, Burnside. It includes sidewalks on busy streets, which would be focused a lot where they're missing now in Coley and East Portland and in Southwest. It includes crossing improvements, rapid flash beacons that allow people to get these five-lane arterials, and protected bike lanes, minimize that conflict that we currently have on our busiest streets. Even though we're allocating 2/3 of the safety money to our busy streets, there's still a huge need to continue to make sure that our residential streets are safer. They're the backbone for a lot of the trips that kids are taking to school and all of us are taking in our neighborhood. Our proposal is that 2/3 of that safety funding that's allocated for local streets would go to fund those school improvements that have been identified in our Safe Routes to School program. It's been really heartening for me as we've had conversations with some of our partners, David Douglas, Portland Public Schools, and others, that even though they'd be paying into this fee, they see the enormous amount of benefit they're getting. They're getting a lot more in safety improvements than they're actually spending toward the fee. In addition to that, funding for our neighborhood greenway system that's providing this alternative to riding on a busy street and is really important, not just for bikes, but for pedestrians, and has major benefits for accessing transit. And this last one, again, which I think is a big improvement over proposals we've had in the past, is this idea of safer shoulders. As we get more disciplined about saying we're going to spend our sidewalk money on our busiest streets, in a sense, we're identifying a bunch of streets that won't have sidewalks for a really long time. So if we can do something there to make sure that people are at least aren't walking in the street, sidewalk safer shoulders could be a big part of our improved safety. So this gives you a sense of kind of what that would mean. 20 to 25 miles of neighborhood greenways, 10 to 12 miles of safer shoulders. There'd be $19 million that would be available for high crash corridor improvements, 100 to 115 safer crossings, up to 400 blocks of additional sidewalk work, 7 to 10 miles of protected bike lanes, and much better response to our traffic safety and livability hotline. Encourage people, continue to call 823-SAFE if you see a traffic safety problem. That's the number for transportation and police. It takes us a while to respond, and we need to have more resources to respond more effectively to that. So the last piece here of that other 3%, and we heard strongly from Portlanders that they want us to continue to be good partners with TriMet, with Multnomah County, with ODOT on some key issues. Specifically, the ones that were called out in the survey were making one of our bridges in the central city earthquake resilient, and also just making sure that in parts of town where transit service right now is really lacking, again, East Portland being and Southwest being that parts of town that sort of have the worst reliability or level of transit service, to be able to help with that however we could. In addition to that, being able to continue to see how we can be good partners around paving gravel and unimproved streets. That's the end of the presentation. Thanks.
Okay. Questions for staff?
I'm very eager to get to the public testimony, but a couple questions for Commissioner Novick. Steve, you've decoupled the residential and non-residential fee portion of our discussion today. Is there a proposal before the public to comment on today with respect to non-residential fees, or are we asking people to focus on the residential fee section?
Actually, as far as I'm concerned, it would be helpful to get comments from the public on the non-residential part, because what we need to do over the next several months is have a conversation with the community about what the non-residential part should look like. So having today be part of that conversation, I think, is perfectly appropriate.
Where did you and the mayor land, at least currently, with respect to parking lots?
Well, the ITE manual treats parking lots as things that don't generate trips, because people don't visit a parking lot. They go to a parking lot on their way to somewhere else. However, one thing that we've been noting is that there are parking lots that have employees. And so there certainly are trips just that the employees themselves take. So one of the things we think that we would like to do is modify the IT manual's approach to recognize that, yes, at least a few people that take trips to parking lots, and take that into account.
Two other quickies. With respect to the total amount that is contemplated to be raised through this fee, are you proposing any kind of administrative cap?
Actually, what we're saying in the ordinance is that 80% will go to maintenance and safety, up to 20% on other things, and the administration would be contained in that up to 20%, and obviously we'll strive to make it as low as possible. However, we don't want to get in the situation we are in the arts tax, where we made a hard pledge of 5%, and now we're struggling, saying, well, it might be 6.5%. Do we have to go back to the voters?
And finally, Commissioner, with respect to the criteria that will be used to determine how the money is spent, are we building into the criteria a preference for spending in areas of the city that have historically not gotten infrastructure investment?
Inherently, we are, because to a great extent, the most unsafe areas of the city are the areas of the city that have not gotten that much infrastructure investment. I mean, the most unsafe areas, as far as the transportation infrastructure is concerned, are Outer East and in Southwest. Those are the places, for the most part, where you see busy streets without sidewalks, and those are the places where the bulk of the safety money will be invested. And by the way, that's also another part of sort of, when you think about the equity of this system, then although I don't like the regressivity of having a fee, although we do have a low income discount, the money will be spent in a progressive way because much of the safety spending will be in the lowest income parts of the city.
Other questions for staff?
A couple questions. So administrative expenses, does that include employees who are not working directly on maintenance projects being able to charge their time to the 20% administrative cap?
Well, it's not a 20% of administrative cap. It's a proposed allocation that would have up to 20% of the revenues going to things other than basic maintenance and basic safety. So it
okay,
could be
so I guess to rephrase my question,
yeah.
Would employees who are not working on basic safety or basic maintenance be able to charge their time to this account, this $53
yes.
million dollar account?
Yes.
Yes, they would.
Depending on what, yeah, sure.
Yes, there's going to, well, we're going to need to have an administrator because we have an appeals process built right. in, so we're going to have an administrator. We're going to have to spend some money building the billing platform. It's our intent to use existing city resources and go through the Kayenta system to try to do it as efficiently and as cost-effectively as possible, but that would be seen as an administrative cost. And then we will have some overhead for employees that do work on projects that might hit the administrative pool as well.
Okay, so what about projects, employees who are not working on any project related to safety or maintenance? I mean, I don't want to pick on somebody, but what comes to mind is, let's say, and I don't mean to pick on Andrew Abbey at all, let's say the LID administrator. He's a PBOT employee. Would he, for instance, be able to charge any of his time to this fund?
Actually, Commissioner, I would say that Andrew specifically would fall into the other 3% because he works on improving unimproved roads.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to remember, and you know this, that a lot of the other revenues that already come to PBOT are restricted. State and federal gas tax revenues have to be spent on streets and roads.
Right.
Local Improvement District, that's what LID stands for. Local Improvement District revenues have to be spent on fixing that street. So the Bureau already administers a lot of buckets of revenue and has staff assigned to those different buckets. Yes, there's an overhead function. You're looking at part of it right here. You know, these three administrators run the Bureau and have others that do likewise. But there are a lot of people that are assigned to particular programs like capital projects or local improvement districts.
Okay. I think it's one of,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's one of those examples, too, of what is really important to have in the annual report and what's reviewed by the Oversight Committee. And it might be a part of what you get in some of that external audited information that's in there as well. I mean, part of what we heard when we were talking to our Oversight Committee about this is, you know, there's issues right now. You have collection costs. We have overhead costs. We didn't want to be playing games around, you know, that piece of it. We want to be really clear about, when it comes to those administrative functions, what those are, and really be clear to the public in how we're spending that money, not play any games around.
So my second question, and Mayor and I were just talking about this right before the council meeting, is what about overhead? Overtime pay. So is there a cap on how much of this money can be paid to employees working overtime?
It's not currently considered, but it would be for if we're going to.
Commissioner, I told him that we should get back to the council about what the use of overtime is now. I mean, overtime is much less used in transportation than it is in police or fire because it's not used to balance out the level of of workforce. It's used when somebody's out on a paving project and it's going to take an extra 3 hours to get it finished. That's when we use overtime.
Typically. And when we have snowstorms.
Yeah.
Or landslides or emergency sewer repairs.
Yeah, sewer repairs over. Yeah,
just does responding to a snowstorm fall under basic maintenance or safety under this proposed transportation
no.
use fee? So that's what I'm trying to get at is, are there, and you know, if you can get back to us, what percentage of your agency's operational budget is paid out in overtime? I guess if you can get that to us before next week. Okay. But
yes.
But I guess my point is, I don't think any of us want to see this money. I think we all want to see the money go for maintenance and safety and not be eaten up by agency overtime.
Right.
We agree.
That's a legitimate expectation of anybody, pro or con.
Commissioner, can I just add one thing to that? Because that has been those conversations, I think, are really good to have, and we've been having them when we're talking about the business community. If you think about the Oversight Committee, we have some positions on that committee for, you know, paving experts, someone from the construction industry with like a finance background. And when we were meeting with different groups, especially from the private contracting side, you know, they're asking a lot of those same kind of questions. And I think it's really good in the reporting that's coming back to City Council to be able to talk about these kinds of things. I mean, are we delivering the services efficiently or not? And are we continuing to get better and how we're doing that? I mean, it's something that's going to be really important for this program to demonstrate as it moves along.
And last question, will there be an independent audit conducted annually, outside audit?
We don't do annual audits of any bureau, but we have an oversight committee in this case, so it's an extra layer. So we're going to have an annual report to the council from the oversight committee.
Also, I have to say that our current auditor has found the Transportation Bureau absolutely fascinating, and I'm quite sure that her successor will find it fascinating as well.
Well, you know, I will say the Children's Levy does have an annual outside audit done every year, and we operate under a 5% administrative cap. We manage to pay for it. Seems like it would be a prudent thing to be done here for not much money.
Okay.
Thank you for the comment there.
Okay. Other questions for staff? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We need to take action on a proposed substitute, I think, and then open the hearing.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. I would like to introduce a substitute ordinance. This substitute makes important key changes to the proposal we filed last week. In no particular order, the substitute removes the portion of the fee assessed for non-residential use to allow council more time to refine the methodology for charging businesses and other non-residential users of the transportation system. The residential portion of the fee is still included in the resolution. To ensure that council acts to pass a non-residential fee prior to the effective date for the residential fee on July 1, 2015, the substitute adds an automatic expiration provision. The provision states, quote, if the City Council does not pass an ordinance for a transportation user fee for non-residential use by November 14, 2014, then City Code Charter Chapter 17.21 will automatically expire and cease to have any effect of law, end quote. The substitute also amends the amount of the residential use fee to reduce it initially and phase it in over 3 years. With this phase-in, the single-family residential use fee will be set at $8 per unit in 2015-16, increasing to $10 per unit in 2016-17 and $12 per unit in 2017-18. The low-income and multifamily fees are set correspondingly proportionally lower. I ask my colleagues to vote to consider the substitute.
Okay, so we have a motion to put the substitute on the table. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion, and what we do is we put the substitute on the table and then we have a hearing so you can comment on the changes as well as on the original idea.
Yeah, I just want to clarify something because I haven't actually had a chance to review the substitute. So you're asking us to vote on this simply to place it on the table before the public.
That's correct. That's correct.
Right.
Okay. Further discussion before we put the substitute on the table? Then a roll call to do that, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
I'm going to support putting the substitute on the table for discussion. I have a further amendment based on my reading of citizen input over the last several weeks. But for this, I vote aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. And then Commissioner Fritz.
If I might move my substitute. This is that Commissioner Novick just mentioned the proposed phasing of $8 the first year, $10 the next year, and $12 the year after that. I'm still concerned that that is too high for folks to get used to. So my substitute proposes to set the fee at $6 for the first year, $9 for the second year, and $12 for the third year, again with the proportionate changes for low-income folks and multifamily folks.
So the main difference is it would start at $6 and end up at $12 in 3 years.
It would basically, instead of the first 2 years being 8 and 10, it would be 6 and 9.
Okay. Is there a second for that motion? Okay. Further discussion on that revision?
Yeah. Is this? I'm going to go back to a conversation, Mayor, we had the other day with some budget notes. Is this amendment acceptable to the sponsors?
It is, yes, to me. I think it is to Mr. Novick as well. So, okay. So roll call on that, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
So again, to reiterate, this means that what we're asking you to comment on is an initial fee of $6 per month for residential properties, proportionately changed for multifamily and low income. Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, and now are we ready to move to public hearing? And do you have some invited testimony?
We do. Actually, okay. Mr. Mayor, first I would like to put into the record a resolution for the council to consider, which would establish our intent to vote on a non-residential proposal before November 14th, 2014. So I'm going to pass out copies of that resolution and give copies to the clerk.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to just read the title?
Oh. I don't know if I kept my copy. The title of the resolution is, it states that the council will pass an ordinance by November 14, 2014, creating a transportation user fee for non-residential use of the transportation system to address the city's significant transportation safety and maintenance needs. And this will be filed today.
Okay. And so we file it today, but we don't take a voice vote on it now to adopt
right.
it. We simply put it into the record that that's going to be filed for next week.
Right.
Okay. Duly noted, and we'll obviously make copies of that available to the public. So thank you. All right. So Commissioner Novick, do you have some invited testimony?
Yes. I would like to ask initially Steph Routh, pedestrian advocate and member of our Funding and Needs Advisory Committee, and Jonathan Ostar of OPAL, also a member of our Funding and Advisory Committee, and Matthew Masetic, small business owner, to present.
Okay, come on up, please. Because you're invited testimony and you were members of the committee, we won't hold you strictly to the 2-minute time limit, but we do ask you to be brief because I know we have a lot of people signed up to be testifying today. So
I guess I'll go first. Mayor, Commissioners, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Jonathan Oster with OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. OPAL builds power for environmental justice and civil rights in our communities. We work predominantly, I would say exclusively, with low-income communities, communities of color, and other vulnerable subpopulations to increase quality of life and environmental health in the communities in which we live, work, play, and pray, and learn. We're conditionally supportive of this proposal at the moment, and I've submitted a written testimony. I'll just summarize for the record. And the reason we're conditionally supportive is because transportation is a lifeline to opportunity.
Excuse me. Do we have your testimony?
I emailed it.
Okay. So we have it. We have it in our offices.
Every office.
Okay.
And I can make copies.
Okay.
Sorry for not bringing extras.
It's okay.
I was saying that transportation is a lifeline to opportunity, and accessing the transportation system helps some people succeed and get ahead, and it actually can be a barrier to others who can't enjoy that same level of access. They can't get to jobs, they can't get to resources, services, schools, recreation, et cetera. Day in and day out at OPAL, we organize low-income transit riders. That's what we do. That's our expertise. We have a Bus Riders Unite membership comprised of transit-dependent riders, exclusively low-income folks, many folks of color, people with disabilities, young people, older people. That's the bread and butter of our membership. They speak for themselves. I don't speak for them today, but I carry their interests and concerns with me every day when I get up and do this work. I've been doing environmental justice work for about 13 years, which is as long as this issue's been being kicked around on the table. So I'm very familiar with it and been tracking it. One of the reasons why we're encouraged and supportive is because the distribution of benefits will be progressive under this particular proposal. And for far too long, low-income communities, communities of color, have had to fight for scraps and have been living in unsafe conditions and have lacked that essential access to basic quality life that the transportation system can provide. Whether you're walking or biking or riding the bus or driving, you need safe roads, you need well-maintained roads, you need safe crossings. And this proposal will get us not all the way there, but a big chunk of the way there, and will do so more equitably than any proposal that I've seen in the past 13 years. I'm really encouraged by both the process, but also the opportunity to mitigate the impact on low-income families. I think that's unique with this process that we haven't seen. The reason we're conditionally supportive of this is because there's still a lot of details that need to be worked out, and I'm hopeful that in the coming weeks we can hash out some of those details and make sure that we nail down some of the finer points to mitigate the impact on low-income families. You've seen in the survey results, we don't love the fact that we're governing by polling, but the reality is that with something like this, we have to make sure we have community support, and there was a high level of support for equity. Low-income families shouldn't be disproportionately burdened, and we should make sure that we're spending the money in ways that promote and increase quality of life for the communities that currently don't have that level of service. And so far, this proposal will get us there, and that's why we're supportive. I am concerned about two things: the oversight of this proposal and the investments. I know that there's a robust oversight committee in place. I want to make sure that equity is not actually part of that oversight committee. Equity should be separated and provided an independent oversight outside of that committee structure, because the committee structure is made up of special interests. And that includes neighborhood associations. It gets us towards a parochial sense of fighting for limited resources, which is a zero-sum model. Equity is actually a superior growth model. Our region, our city, will actually grow faster and better and more inclusively if we follow equitable principles and make equitable investments. I'd like to see the Office of Equity and Human Rights have that oversight. I'd like to make sure that they have the resources to do so. I don't trust the Oversight Committee to be able to, frankly, to be able to provide the level of oversight to make sure that the low-income discount is working right and that the money is being spent in an equitable manner. So that's one suggestion. The other suggestion that I'm afraid seems like a losing battle, but I'm gonna mention it anyway because we don't shy away from tough positions, is a sunset clause. This is the best solution at the moment. It's not the best solution forever. And I don't think that the failure of the feds to show movement on a gas tax should be the reason why we can't anticipate in 10 years that maybe we have a more creative, more progressive regional solution to this problem. And so I'd like to force us back to the table in 10 years to see if we can do better. And that's why I'd like to see a sunset clause put into place. I really do want to commend Commissioner Novick in particular and the mayor for, staking out tough positions on this. You're elected to make these tough calls, and it's nice to see decisive leadership. And, we're our necks out there with you on this. And we don't shy away from the tough positions because they might not be intuitively popular. This is going to be good for a lot of the communities that are struggling in this community, and that's why we support it. Thank you.
Jonathan, if I just may respond to your point about a sunset clause. We're concerned that if we put in a sunset clause, that people might interpret that, whatever we said, as a signal that the maintenance and safety issues are going to go away. But in the future, I at least am very happy to work with you to try to come up with a less regressive solution to these problems. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Novick, could you remind us how you envision the 18-member oversight committee would be selected?
We envision that the commissioner in charge would select the oversight committee subject to the criteria that we put into the ordinance. And actually, Commissioner Fritz had a significant amount to do with how the Oversight Committee is composed, so I'd be happy to have her explain why she thinks that this committee is acceptable.
Actually, I was interested in your comment about neighborhood groups not necessarily getting it on equity. I've been really pleased in my discussions with parks committees all over Portland that, in fact, Portlanders are good-hearted and do understand, especially when given good information, that some people have more than others. So we had parks committees all over Portland saying, put the new parks in East Portland. So there's the geographic changes distribution, which I think is important. It's similar to the Portland Utility Review Board. There's some topic experts. There are other criteria for the I didn't know it was 18 now. I thought the last time I had input it was 60, it was 15. So there's categories of interest groups. I think it's a great suggestion to have the Office of Equity and Human Rights and possibly the Housing Bureau also to have some oversight.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Routh.
Yep. Well, Mayor Hales and members of the council, thank you for having me today. And I wanted to go after John, basically, so I could say yes, what he said. I'm a member of the advisory committee. I've also been a member of the Portland Bureau of Transportation Budget Advisory Committee for, I think, about 4 years. And one thing that I've noticed, I mean, funding has been obviously an issue since I for about the last decade that I've been in transportation advocacy. It's certainly been a huge issue in the last 4 years that I've been on the Budget Advisory Committee. I think it was 3 years ago that we had to cut $16 million, and that hurt. And a lot of people, the number of members of the Budget Advisory Committee termed it as cutting into the marrow of the Bureau. So I do think that the Bureau is pretty darn streamlined at this point, involuntarily so in some ways. And I just want to say I also grew up in Portland. I grew up in Park Rose Gateway. There was not a sidewalk in front of my residence when I was growing up. There still isn't, guess what? And now I live in Lentz, so I cross 82nd Avenue a number of times a day, and that is a cup of coffee every morning. As former member, executive director of Oregon Walks, I've attended many vigils of people who have been killed on our roads. It has become my new holiday tradition. Actually, it's a somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas. There's usually shortly right around daylight savings time, someone's killed. It's usually on a busy road. It's oftentimes a road with substandard or completely lacking sidewalks or crossings, and I know that we are talking about the costs of this utility fee, proposed fee. There's very high cost of our failing transportation system and for whom it fails, and I'm really motivated to support a funding structure, any funding structure that can improve safety on our streets, as well as appreciating the fact that we need to maintain what we already have. And I'm supportive of the funding, but also I do also have some concerns, the same concerns of low-income mitigation. One thing that I've learned on the advisory committee and talking with housing advocates is also other discounts that the city has structured that don't actually find the people who need to access them. So I actually hope that this transportation utility fee is an opportunity to have a more robust conversation about other discounts in other bureaus that and how we can across the board make the city's allocation and administration of those discount programs more accessible and also more accountable through reporting. And I guess I'm looking at you, Councillor Fish.
you're looking at me because you and I are completely synced up on this. And I thank you for putting that on the record, because we do have programs for our water and sewer, BES customers, low-income discounts for older adults who are trying to keep in their homes, things of that nature. We are not getting to all the people that might benefit. And I think this is music to the mayor's ear, because he's always asking us to look holistically and not just bureau by bureau. I think taking a broader look at how we market these programs and making sure that people are aware. We've redesigned our brochures so they're actually readable by older adults, the fonts, the information. So I'd love to follow up with you on that one, because we're eager to get the word out.
And I think that there's a number of housing advocates, at least, that we've talked with that is a really robust conversation that we'd like to have. And I think transportation advocates are coming new to some of that. And I think that this is a good opportunity. So thank you very much for that.
Actually, just to follow up on that, it's my understanding that the water and sewer low-income discounts are up to $40 a month. So if we can reach some people who are not taking advantage of those now, even if they're paying a $12 a month transportation fee, if they get – actually, no, they'd be paying less. They'd be more like an $8 transportation fee. They would actually be $32 a month to the good if they get a $40 discount and pay an $8 fee.
Well, this broader question of how we get at multifamily developments and get discounts and apply them has been vexing us for a long time on the utility side. So regardless of the outcome of this debate, this is something we need to get right with all of our partners here. So
right. And I think that because of this process, you also have more advocates who understand other issues outside of the scope of their missions. So, and then finally, a big one as of, you know, last night, decoupling the business, residential and non-residential. I'm interested in seeing that conversation take place. I am concerned about the idea that that we may end up moving by November 14th far away from a 50-50 split between residents and non-residential commercial, and it would be very concerning to see something that gets beyond a high five, you know, from
that. I appreciate you raising that. It's certainly not my intent, and I don't think it's anyone else's, that in taking more time to work out the technical issues about exactly how do we assess the trip generation of this business or this type or that type, it's not my intention to move away from the 50-50 split. That seems fair enough to me, and I think that's part of the deal as far as I'm concerned.
And I appreciate the intention, and I would love to see stronger statement.
Yeah.
So thank you very much for your leadership and time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me. My name is Matthew Macedek. I own Red Castle Games on Southeast Foster Road. I also employ 11 employees there. So I'm a little different from my compatriots up here in that I'm on the business side of things, and I just want to put it into perspective for everyone how it would work for me. And it would account for about, give or take, somewhere between a quarter and one-third of 1% of my revenue to pay for safer, better streets. And I think that's a completely reasonable fee. It's a utility that's more important to me than my phone bill, yet with the proposed fee structure as it is, without even revisiting it, it's still less than my phone bill would be. I think that where I'm located on Foster, it's a high crash corridor. And in my 4 years in business, I've seen 4 accidents personally outside my business. I've had one customer witness a fatal accident a block away. It's not a safe area. It's not a safe street. And I know I've had customers mention, like, oh, it's horrible parking. It's horrible getting around. There's intersections like 82nd and Foster that, even on non-rush hour times, they're bad intersections. And anything we can do to help address these issues is good for my business because it makes it easier to have UPS get their goods to me, to have my customer get to my store easier. These are, in fact, good for me. And I know coming up soon is going to be the Foster Streetscape Plan, where we're going to look at making Foster a safer street. And it's taken, gosh, I think 7 years to get here, and I would love to see that for more streets around town. I grew up on 150th between Division and Powell, and to this day, it's still an unimproved street. And I would love to see that paved. And I think, you know, improving our infrastructure, everyone bears the responsibility. And while this isn't a perfect proposal, no proposal ever is, the fact is the proposal from Commissioner Adams several years ago was $5. Now it's $11. If we keep waiting, how high will this proposal go? It's a pay less now or pay more later. And from a strictly business sense, I'd rather pay less now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do you have others that you've invited? Or?
Mr. Mayor, actually, we don't have another official panel, but we have some organizational representatives that I'd like to bring forward.
Hey, and so have we. So we're going to let him call the public organizations that are here.
Right.
Ma'am, you're gonna both need to stop.
Our talking. When are we gonna have?
Excuse me, sir.
Cut us short.
Excuse me. This is a big deal. Excuse me. We're gonna be here for the duration. Excuse me. This is a big deal, and you need to hear the facts, and so do we all. So we're gonna have the facts, which we've just done, and we're gonna invite people to testify, and we're gonna hear you.
You're not gonna cut us short and say you're gonna
too late? No. Go ahead.
2 minutes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah,
all right, enough, please. This is a deliberative body, and we're not going to have shouting. Let's get going. Steve?
Let's respect.
I would like
ma'am, to. I'm going to ask you to stop, and then I'm going to ask you to leave. Steve, go ahead.
I would like to ask David Leslie from Ecumenical Ministries, if he's here, to come forward, and David Widmark of Home Forward, and Neil McFarlane of TriMet.
Afternoon. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here, Mayor Hells, Commissioner Novick, and rest of the council. I feel like it's a little bit of a moving game, so I had testimony to provide with what I knew this morning, but I think it's pretty germane. Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon is a faith-based organization. We have a number of congregations, community ministries, and denominational offices in the city of Portland. So the user fee, of course, got our attention. And I want to first say that we are here today neither in support or opposition. We only had two categories, but very concerned about the way this is being put together. And at the same time, want to affirm the importance of and necessity for well-maintained streets, functional sidewalks, and safe crossings, understanding that this is a responsibility both on the maintenance and the development side of all who work, live, and even visit this city. But the key issue for us is how is this responsibility developed, how the projects are developed, and the associated costs are determined and shared. So herein lies our concern. First, as it relates to the residential rates, and I do really appreciate the openness to start looking at those very systemically, we also are very concerned how that will impact Portland residents. I think, as you well know, there are many residents in our city who work and yet day in and day out don't make enough to make ends meet. We have seniors on fixed incomes with the same problems and low-income folks that are losing ground, not gaining ground economically. So the proposed fee at $138 or $97 and now amended possibly still are really egregious for a lot of our folks. We have an emergency food program in the Cully neighborhood in far northeast Portland. And I can tell you from our staff report is that every day we're starting to see more and more working people and seniors on fixed incomes who are not making it month to month, even in the current economic climate. And this is just another piece of the household budget they're going to have to deal with no increase on the revenue side. Additionally, of course, we are very concerned about the impact on faith-based and community-based nonprofits that, as you know, are vital parts of the city's safety net system. Using the fee calculator on the website, which, by the way, we just found out about last week, and we're not part of the task force in the conversation, so it was new news to us, as it was probably to a lot of people here. What we discovered is many of our congregations, social ministries, and denominational bodies will end up paying thousands of dollars a year under the current fee structure. This is not a segment that can charge more money for product. There's no way to kind of get that back, so it may result in cutbacks in staff or services. Additionally, many congregations in the city provide free or reduced rental space, service, or performance space to other community-based organizations and nonprofits. So what might happen is that they may have to end up raising facility fees to underwrite the additional costs, which puts further stress on other nonprofit sector in our community, kind of a vicious roundabout economic cycle. I do want to say something also about the process, and I think you all are taking this very seriously. But I really think it's very important to have total, as much as we can, community input on the process. I think one thing I would just say about that is that we really, now that we knew the rates, and we didn't know that a week and a half ago, I think it's really important to go back to the public and say, here's what we're thinking about and get that impact so we can have this kind of robust conversation at 20, 30, 40 town hall meetings rather than the limited amount, which was in concept. Now we're talking about real design. I think it's also important to look at how do other communities do this. I know we have the list, both in Oregon and outside, because there is a variety of caps on fees. How much, what do you do with the nonprofit sector? What do you do with the religious sector? And it would just be good to get more information from that. So we designed the best possible program in this city. So at the end of the day, I really want to thank you very much for bringing this out because, again, from our membership, we're kind of in detention. We do really understand the importance of well-maintained streets, sidewalk safety. It's important for the religious community as it is for the general community. I also think at the same time it might be good to take a little more time on this and look at how is this going to be enacted in the most equitable, sustainable, and ways possible that minimizes economic hardship for those living on the margins and that part of our community that serve every day those living on the margins in our city. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for testimony. One thing I guess I'd like you to check on, mm-hmm. and I'll ask the Transportation Bureau to do likewise, and that is, did any of those other 28 cities treat nonprofits or churches differently? We do under the property tax system because it's a property tax. But I don't believe that there are utilities that exempt nonprofits or churches, including city utilities like those 28. But we ought to check on that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's in our research base right now also. So something to check for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Hale, commissioners, thank you for this opportunity to offer comment today. My name is David Woodmark, former Gresham City Councilor and current chair of the Home Forward Board of Commissioners. We appreciate how hard it is to allocate scarce resources to accomplish a sometimes overwhelming need. We also deeply appreciate the partnership the City of Portland is in helping us to meet that mission, to house the most vulnerable within our community. We are here today because we are very concerned that the proposed fee unintentionally collides with that mission in ways you may not have anticipated. Through our VASH program, which is a veterans assistance program, through the short-term rental assistance, the STRAW program, Section 8, and other programs. In short, our initial analysis at the impact of this impact on Home Forward, the agency that provides assistance to over 15,000 people in this community we serve, ranges from $700,000 to $1 million per year, based on the analysis that we had as of this morning. With me today, I also have Jill Smith, who will be testifying later. She's the director of our rental assistance program. But before I go on, I want to thank the staff from the Bureau of Transportation who met with us recently to express their willingness to work on a solution. As noted in the letter to the Oregon Opportunity Network, Home Forward, and other nonprofit colleagues stand ready to work with you to address this problem on our streets and sidewalks and protecting our vulnerable citizens. Thank you again this time.
Chair Woodmark, can I just ask you a question? And Jill has signed up to testify?
Yes. You did not?
Well, can we have her come up with David?
Because sure,
she administers the Section 8 program. And
right.
And David's very knowledgeable, but she actually administers it.
Jill's the one with the numbers.
Did she come after the TriMet?
Yes, sure. Just stand by. Thanks. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. McFarland.
Mr. Mayor and Commissioners, again, thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Neil McFarland, TriMet General Manager. And I just wanted to offer three particular comments about the fee. First, we recognize that repairing and maintaining the roads will be an advantage to our customers, who will have a more comfortable ride, but also to our operators, who will have a safer chance to operate our vehicles on safe city streets. Second, the proposal, which includes a number of investments related to sidewalks, is incredibly important to us and our business long term. Somebody has described a transit trip as a nice walk interrupted. And what I really do appreciate is the chance for you to have more investments in that walking phase of a transit trip. Transit riders are pedestrians at the beginning and the end of the trip. And so making that effective, safe, is incredibly important to our mission, and we appreciate your attention to that and this proposal. Third, and perhaps just to make that more specific, your focus on improvements in East County is incredibly important to us. It's an area where we're focused related to the equity and the importance of adding transit service, particularly along 122nd, which is one of the key, very busy corridors that is targeted by programs, the program that you have in front of you. But let me note how we would take advantage of that. My commitment to you is that if you make these kinds of improvements along 122nd, from Park Rose to Lentz, we will then follow up and make the Line 71, or the equivalent of it, our lucky 13th frequent service bus line, because it is a very strong transit corridor. But again, access to and from that corridor is challenged right now in terms of safety of sidewalks, of lighting, of safe crossings, which are incredibly important to making a fully successful transit corridor. And I would just also note that that's the kind of model that we at TriMet have been trying to develop with the city over a long period of time, but also with our other jurisdictions that we serve within the region, where there are physical improvements to make transit access desirable, safe, and comfortable, and then we can follow on with a very successful increment of service. that's a synergistic approach to transportation investment, and we really do appreciate the opportunity to forward that. We're certainly mindful of the impact the new fee can have on businesses and residents and their obvious interest in digesting the details. We have digested the details with your very capable staff, and we believe that the program is well-considered, well-balanced, and is fair and equitable. In that regard, we want to particularly congratulate the proposal that has the low-income reduction. We as an agency are also focused, as you are, on equity and making sure that we serve transit-dependent riders particularly, and we think that's an important step. So, again, I'd like to thank Commissioner Novick and the mayor for their leadership and, again, offer our support and continued partnership with you in serving the transportation needs of the city of Portland.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you very much. And then let's...
We substitute... David, could you stay? We'll just substitute Jill in case...
Yes, in case there's questions for you. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Jill Smith. I'm the director of the rent assistance programs at Home Forward. The Housing Choice Voucher, or the Section 8 program, as it's commonly known, it allows low-income families to choose to rent anywhere in an open market. Oregon just passed landmark legislation to become effective July 1st, recognizing this subsidy as a protected source of income, meaning landlords can no longer deny a rental application from someone just because they're low-income and have a Housing Choice Voucher. The City of Portland has worked mightily over the past recent years to protect this group of renters and to increase access to multiple housing options throughout the community. Two critical things to know about the proposed fees impact to this group. Over 4,300 of these very low-income families are renting apartments in the Portland city limits in buildings that are not eligible for the discounted rate. There is currently no mechanism proposed for them to receive the discount. As an aside, the discount for a household with little or no income is still a really big hit to their budget. As Chair Widmark pointed out, people may be faced with foregoing critical needs, such as food, copays, critical medications, over just a few dollars. The entire community has rallied to house vulnerable veterans through this program, specifically for high barrier, chronically ill veterans. And it's taken huge amounts of collaboration in our community to achieve this between the city, the county, Home Forward, and the Veterans Administration. I'm happy to say 360 of these folks are currently housed. And of those, 137 are renting in the city limits in units that would not be eligible for the discount. We cannot afford to destabilize those we've worked so hard to protect. Again, we really appreciate the willingness of PBOT staff to work with us, and we have met with them in order to protect our low-income seniors, people with disabilities, families, and veterans, including those who have no housing assistance. We urge you to slow this process, work in partnership with us towards a more equitable solution. I'm happy to provide follow-up, answers, research,
Jill,
any
I have,
questions. Yeah.
So I haven't been briefed on this prior today, but I have just two questions. Mm-hmm. Chair Widmark said that the impact on Home Forward could be between 700,000 and a million. Mm-hmm. How would this impact Home Forward as opposed to the individual voucher holders?
Recently, Home Forward made plans to invest up to $3 million over the next 3 years to increase payment standards, which is the amount of subsidy provided to voucher holders to allow them to access units in all areas of the community. And that's rent assistance dollars going to landlords. And you know, that money will now be going to pay this fee rather than helping us to access those units.
And is the area that you're asking us to focus on specifically Section 8 voucher holders, which is the largest housing program in the state? You administer about 8,000 of those vouchers, although you've told us about 4,300 households would not be eligible for the discount in Portland.
Correct.
The VASH program, which is the Veteran Supportive Housing Program, which is the gold standard in housing. It's services plus housing for formerly homeless veterans. And you've identified a number of them who are housed in buildings that would not be eligible.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't tell us what the linkage was to the short-term rent assistance program, the STRAW program. How would that be impacted?
Really in a similar way. That's a program that folks live throughout the community, not in designated low-income housing, and it's really an eviction prevention program, which the city and the county and Home Forward and several community partners contribute to. So there is no there's no way to identify the units and these low-income people. It's a landlord fee.
So vouchers either follow the person or the building generally.
Yes.
They're either project-based or they go to the individual.
Yes.
Have you had a chance to come up with from your point of view, a proposed fix to address this concern?
You know, we've talked about a few things, but it was really just brought to our attention 2 days ago, so we haven't had a lot of opportunity.
Commissioner, Jill, there's one thing I want to clarify is that we have considered the possibility of completely exempting certain low-income people from the fee. The problem is our lawyers tell us that if you get into those kind of, I mean, at a certain point when you are exempting people based on income, then the courts will say it's not a fee, it's a tax, and then you get into the issues.
Folks, you need to let people speak, including members of the council.
Then you get into the issues we had with the arts tax, where we say, do we have to exempt people on PERS, et cetera. So that is the quandary that we find ourselves in. However, this does not go into effect until next July 1st, and that gives us some time to think about a variety of ways that we can mitigate the impact on the lowest income people.
Commissioner Novick, is one option just conceptually to look at voucher holders whose income is zero to some amount and just declare that people with below a threshold across all categories would be exempt?
Well, Commissioner, based on what the lawyers have told us, I'm not sure that that's possible. We can explore that. I mean, I don't think that you do that with the sewer bill, do you? Is there anybody who's exempt from paying the sewer bill?
Well, the difficulty here is that, as you know, the sewer bill goes to the landlord in multifamily buildings where you have low-income folks, and there's different ways it gets apportioned.
The same will be true here.
Well, yes and no. These are voucher holders, and there's I don't. We could spend the whole hearing talking about the way it's regulated differently by the federal government. But the bottom line is there are voucher holders with no income, or very little income, who can't pay more than 30% of their income pursuant to the voucher, which could be next to nothing.
Correct.
For whom any fee is a trade-off, and there's an impact on the dollars Home Forward can put into this program, which we've asked them to up their investment to get to choice neighborhoods. So my guess is there's a solution that we could find with the lawyers. You've made a commitment to work on it.
Thank you.
And we're willing to do that.
Thank you for framing
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your service. Thank you. Okay, Steve, do you have others that you plan to call? Or?
Actually, I mean, I think that there are three other organizational representatives or heads here, and I realize everybody else is waiting, but I'd like to know if Heather Hale from Venture Portland, Tom Chamberlain from the AFL-CIO, and Andrew Frazier from the Small Business Advisory Committee would be willing to speak.
Okay, come on up, please. Good afternoon. Go ahead, Tom.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Tom Chamberlain, and I'm president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. This has been a very interesting discussion today, and I want to commend you, first of all, for your willingness to have continued discussions on how this is funded. But the bottom line is we can't kick the transportation can down the road. Portland was founded as a port city. It's a transportation hub. Our infrastructure, our economy is dependent upon it. Folks need to get to and from work, and it's a problem that's been ignored far too long. While I understand there may be some wrinkles in the revenue, the basic concept of repairing our streets, keeping them safe for our kids, has to be addressed and has to be addressed now. For example, I happen to live in Southwest Portland. I live in a neighborhood that has streets that aren't paved. I have 5 grandkids that go to a park that doesn't have crosswalks. And people going up and down Capitol are doing 40, 50, 60 miles an hour. Those things need to be addressed. And I know in East Portland, it's even a worse problem. So please, do not kick this down the road. Get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Heather Hale, and I'm the executive director of Venture Portland, but I'm here today filling in for our president, Brian Alfano, who had to duck out for a family commitment. As you all know, Venture Portland is the support system for the city's 50 neighborhood business districts, which contain 19,000 businesses and provide 250,000 jobs. 98% of Portland's neighborhood businesses have five or fewer employees. As those dedicated business owners know, in Portland, small is really big.